So, a very warm welcome to each and every one of you. Special thanks as well, of course, to Sangha Live for hosting this event, for George, last moment or two, Caroline, and other members of the team who ensure the regular flow on of these rather precious meetings of the networks of practitioners and new to practice who join very regularly on these Sunday evening events. And I should get in a quick ad here that from tomorrow morning, that's 8 o'clock a.m. European, Central European time, an hour each morning, for those of you who have the time and opportunity, do join for an hour session from Monday to Friday each morning. So, as was mentioned, the period of time falls into three areas. Firstly, there is a guided meditation. This will touch upon the theme. Secondly, and in the second 30 minutes, I'll speak to you on the theme of ultimate truth, relative truth. And then finally, there's the opportunity for any of you, either through the chat column or on the screen, to ask a response, ask a question, or give a response. At the end of the talk, I'll speak to you 2 or 3 minutes, as George just did, with the encouragement to give support to the team and also, in fact, to myself as well. I'll just take a couple of minutes here with regard to the first 30 minutes. So it's a guided meditation. And I know from communications with Caroline and George of Sangha Live there that there's an extensive network of you, some very seasoned meditators and practitioners, some of you very, very new with interest and curiosity. And it's finding and striking that balance, this is with the guided meditation, to offer some guidance, but that it's not dominating the 30 minutes. So what that means in this session, the first session together for the 30 minutes, is I'll say a few words. There will be a pause for a period of time. I'll say a few words, then another pause, and that will be the thread running through the 30 minutes. And if you feel, when you come to the end of the 30 minutes, the pauses weren't long enough, then put in a complaint to Sangha Live and I'll review the situation over again. But hopefully you'll get the sense of it. 2 minutes now, just on the theme for the evening. We find ourselves as human beings engaged in the dynamic of being a human being who is under the influence of the world impacting upon us, and we as humans impact upon the world. And we find ourselves, humanly enough, addressing and attending to this every day. The actuality of that influence we can find with practices, mindfulness, clarity, well-being, equanimity, wisdom, and much, much more, which will give us the capacity in the daily life to respond well to outgoing situations, to respond well to situations coming to us which we didn't anticipate nor plan nor expect, and equally respond well to situations within ourselves, of our view about ourselves, and find some insight and clarity with that as well. All of this is called relative truth, conventional truth. Important and valuable precious there, but is that it? And in this period of time with you, I want to address both and lean more towards, with the talk especially, towards the ultimate truth of things, which is to be looked at in a rather different way. I hope you'll get the sense of this as during this period of time, and do ask any responses and questions if that might be helpful for you and for others. So let's have this around 25 minutes of a guided meditation together. And in that, we wish to check with the posture. So if you are sitting on a chair, do sit tall. Unless there is some back issues, problems, do not lean into the back of the chair so that the whole posture feels rather tall and upright. So the being supports itself. Unless, of course, there is some issues with the back or other parts of the body. This is the experience of just sitting. Being very steady. A human being conscious of itself. being steady and unusually still with the posture. Consciousness, meaning being conscious of the physical life. Energy, warmth, cells, vibrations. Life experiencing itself, intimate with itself. and expanding the awareness a little further to include the space around our being. So there is a conventional sense, an everyday agreement. I am a human being abiding in this immediacy of this environment. We are, so to speak, coexisting with what is around. Our life is relative to what surrounds us. What surrounds us is often relative to the way we perceive it. As human beings, we have potential. We have potential to make worthwhile changes with ourselves. We have the potential to initiate changes with who or what surrounds us. This is our conventional experience of life. One event is relative to something else, inwardly and outwardly. Is this the sum total of discovery? Making changes, developing as a human being. exploring coexistence with another or what's around. Or is this a worthwhile preparation? Worthwhile preparation, which is not about coexistence. Not just about me and other. May your being see deeply into life. May your beings explore the richness. May your beings touch upon liberating truth. Thank you. Just going to have a sip of the water here. All right. Thank you for lending an ear. Next 30 minutes, I'll speak to you on the theme So I'll keep with the conventional for a few minutes and then explore with you further. So, in this rather brief engagement with this world that you and I are participating in, given the dynamics, that means all that reveals and shows itself from within, influencing the feeling life, the thinking life, physical life, consciousness, awareness, meditative life, and more, is not something which can be kind of marginalized insofar as our life, whatever its condition, will directly or indirectly have some impact, sometimes considerable, elsewhere. Recognition of this and its acknowledgement brings with it, two words now, responsibility. So that responsibility in this conventional relative world manifests and shows itself in taking wise care of our existence and that responsibility expanding itself quite naturally in care for the other people, creatures, environment, so forth. And it might well be that in this movement through daily life, these two areas are a genuine priority or developing into a priority which is requiring from us huge amount of dedication. So in coming into contact with this body of teachings and others, obviously, it is in a way appealing to something deep and authentic and valuable. Not only any worthwhile body of teachings reduces the suffering and the stress and the unhappiness, the worry and the anxiety, but a worthwhile body of teachings gives fresh insights and understanding about the dynamic with life. And we thus feel an empathy for the circumstances of the other, whatever they might be. There are some of you listening this evening, the more the better, but some of you this evening genuinely have a wealth of practice. And I'm using this word practice here as a umbrella concept which is dedicated to an engagement with life to bring, shall we say, the best out of the being. And therefore, it includes livelihood and it includes action. It includes meditation and awareness. It includes love and wisdom. It includes understanding and insight. And there is no end to our potential to keep practicing, to stay steady and true to it, that we leave no stone unturned with life, because it makes possible a precious sense of our validity as a human being. In all of this, we need to be exceptionally mindful, that means seeing clearly, exceptionally mindful or see really, really clearly as possible any kind of reactivity of the self, of the I, in this exploration. If you think you are important, frankly, regard it as an ego trip. If you think you are unimportant, frankly, regard it as an ego trip. The exploration and the freeing up of the being becomes exceptionally mindful, conscious of the polarizing into these extremes. I am somebody, I am nobody, as one example. This is a complete distraction from authentic discovery. But as mentioned to you a few moments ago, and in a way we need to put a little bit hand on heart with this observation I'm mentioning to you, there can be a wealth of practice that might be over years, it might be for some of you over decades, and For another, it's not about years or decades, but rather there have been significant turning points in one's life, from inspiration, from realization, from a dramatic situation, and in the phenomena of the impact of that, it shifted your life. You're kind of, use the spiritual language a little bit here, kind of born again. You suddenly, decisively moved out of a situation and it's opened up your life and you're moving ahead with it. You're exploring deeply with it. You're really committed. Something people do this. And the other, or the combination of this gradual, precious, ongoing practice. But in both hearts and minds, the question may arise, is that it? Is it enough to have a life dedicated to wisdom, to love, to kindness, modesty of lifestyle, tremendous vigilance with regard to our ego, and much more? Is that it? Are we, as humans, kind of, what should we say, contracted into this condition? And therefore, we will always recognize our potential. We will always feel our limitations. And there's always much more we can engage and explore. I would say to that, yes, might be the case. I think the potential of human being is phenomenal. And it is a remarkable journey. But the doubt, and this could be a very healthy doubt, and some doubts are preciously healthy, could be summarized as, is that it? Constant exploration, constant experience, constant looking at issues, constant engagement in service in the variety of ways. Is that it? No. Relatively, conventionally, everyday agreement with potential and learning and discovery, all of which is important, but I would still say it is a preparation. And the preparation is what I want to speak to you about right now. Let's take all the, for those of you, the seasoned ones amongst you, all the sound years of practice that you've engaged in. Everything from the retreats. I must say that I'm a meditation teacher. From the retreats, from the pilgrimages. I hope you've all made pilgrimages in this life. They're beautiful. From all the forms of exploration, the great benefits of psychology and psychotherapy and yoga and tai chi and massage and solitude and silence and being in the nature, and from ordination and much, much, much more. And from the relationships and the communications and the parenting and much, much more. All of this is precious. But for the seasoned ones amongst you, for those of you who know about making change in your life, which has been precious and important, and you're still happy years later you made such a change because you had the courage and the vision to do this. and all of that direction it takes you in. However, how about forgetting your life? I'm not talking long term, but right now, how about forgetting it? How about recognizing that progress, development, the movement in time, I'm like this, I can expand and develop this and so forth. How about seeing all of that as everyday truth? My present situation is relative to my past. My present situation is relative to my future. It's all terribly relative. Is that it? No. Therefore, it requires, in a way, metaphorically, a kind of turning our back on our life, a kind of forgetfulness of even the most subtle levels of self-interest to develop, to improve, to expand, to learn. Forget it. Forget it. Now, where does it leave us? You might say, oh, it leaves me in the present moment. No, 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 no. Forget the present moment. It's another distraction. It's so easy to glorify the here and now. Do not glorify it. Do not put yourself into that box. There are things far more important than being in the here and now. That's all part of practice. Then say, well, all right. See, present, past, future is all relative, all mutually influencing. Okay. I'm not, as it were, planting myself into those fields. They have a place, relative, because it's relative. Then what? So I've turned my back on my life, my whole identity, everything I've done, who I think I am, what I've achieved, what other people, what I've achieved for others or whatever. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Don't you feel that's a bit, somewhere in the deep of you, a bit limiting? A bit. Might be very calm and precious and doing beautiful things and serving others and beautiful way of life, but it, to me, it feels a bit boxed, a little bit contracted. But if I can forget myself, leave that calm, that clarity, none of us are going to be perfect with this, honestly, but just leave that calm and clarity. Forget all of that. Could this, as it were, that we could almost say to ourselves, I've done enough work on myself. I've done enough preparation. I've done this, I've done that, etc. Forget all of that. What would it be to find out what the ultimate truth of life is, which has nothing to do with me, nothing to do with how I am as a human being? It's not relevant to it. Then it gets interesting. Very interesting. All right. So, I hope you're still with me. You have a chance for some questions in a few moments. With that, it requires, I don't want to exaggerate too much because I just feel we're getting back into the relative, but I'm going to put it in quote. It requires a certain trust. A trust of, I'm calling it this evening, self-forgetfulness. I'm calling it turning my back on. I'm calling it not being interested in development as a human being. I'm calling it letting go of all of that, but not slipping back into the old patterns. Either trying to be in the present moment would be one pattern, or trying to be different from how I was. So not interested in that. It might require a certain trust. We might say it's a certain unknowing. We might say, forgetful of myself, may begin to give some whisper of something which is, doesn't really have much relationship to myself. And this is where truth comes in. And I use the word slightly cautiously, ultimate, because it's a bit dualistic there, in which if I'm not in any way boxed in, not feeling any wish to be contracted into, even a really sweet life, not wishing to be contracted into, could this begin to give a sense, without changing anything in myself, anything, remember, give a sense of something uncontracted. Not only uncontracted, uncontractable. Regardless of how the persona of the human being presents itself. And in our, what should we call it, receptivity, in our sense, there has been sufficient preparation. I've done the practice, or I've had some sudden changes in my life. We're not too concerned where our life is going and what it's leading to and all of that. Because something which is uncontracted takes an interest. And we're not concerned. This isn't easy. We're not concerned if this, I'm calling uncontracted. If you're religious, you might call finding God. If you're in the Eastern teachings, you might call it nirvana. If you're teaching, you might call it liberation. Whatever word you like to use. And incidentally, the Buddha used more than 100 words, different words. Did a check through the text. And he, and I'm doing exactly the same this evening, says one turns one's attention away, I, me and mine, and engaged in this world, towards, he used different words, and one of them was towards the deathless. I'm using the word towards the uncontracted. So there is a sense that past, present and future kind of contract each other. They're limited. They have to be. And this sense of that has extraordinary potential, and this is the precious element of it, to put our small life into a proper perspective in which I am neither important nor am I unimportant. These are just views in the reactive state. Building ourselves up, putting ourselves down, feeling good enough, feeling not good enough. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Unhealthy. So that it may, even in your good listening right now, it may seem a little theoretical. Maybe. It may seem a little abstract. It may seem to be flying over the top of the head or just landing in the brain cells. Unfortunate, but of course it may be there. Nevertheless, truth, as distinct from the view, the touch of truth is extraordinarily freeing. And when speaking of ultimate truth, the touch of ultimate truth is genuinely dissolving the walls of contraction. It is genuinely waking us up. It is genuinely liberating. So precious is this that we may not notice any single change in our whole being. Like this something. And it's not theoretical, it's not abstract. We may not notice anything. It doesn't require any experience, because experiences are all limited without exception. Doesn't require any reaction of the mind for confirmation. It's certainly not abiding in not knowing. Definitely not. That's far too short for us human beings with our potential. So in other words, ultimate truth, with its extraordinary liberating element to it, in an extraordinary way, doesn't require some kind of event in the being to somehow confirm it. And if there is, if one's going to be kind, if there is, it's a kind of, at the best sense, seeing and knowing. But it's not of the mind, it's not of the heart, it's not of the body, it's not of the intellect, it's not of thought. And the encouragement with you this evening is in times, in moments, in periods, the environment is not relevant to this. The sense of well-being may be well established with you in certain times. There is nothing that you want from life. There is nothing that you want from yourself. You're not in the spell of yesterday, today, or tomorrow, past, present, or future. And you're just, shall we say, quietly abiding. Life is not grabbing you. You are not grabbing it. And in this calm abiding, it would be a valid gesture to forget yourself. Quietly receptive to the everyday life is in a proper perspective. But most significantly of all, there is a freedom, a discovery, not dependent on the human condition, which is not contracted by birth or by death. Thank you. Right, sip of the water. Let's have a couple of quiet minutes together and then we'll proceed on. So I'll take a couple of minutes, as the teachers do at this period within the 90 minutes that we have together. And the kindness and the generosity, the gifts is precious, whether it's the act of sharing, it's the act of the gift, which is beautiful amongst our species, and in a very practical way, it ensures that the regularity of these lovely programs and fresh teachers coming to teach at Sangha Live gain a lot of benefit and experience, as does the participants, the Sangha, the men and women who listen. And for all of that, all of this to take place, behind the scenes are our guardian angels, small team of people who really put time and love and dedication to making these events happen. And we have the blessings in this world of technology of using it for one of its very best purposes, and that is teachings and practices and explorations. So each of you who give a gift, both the Sangha Live and myself shared as well, really enable this to flow along. And it's one of the beautiful statements, really, of the tradition, that the act of the donation, dana, D-A-N-A, the Pali word, the language of the Buddha, the act of the gift is something precious and beautiful about it. Many will use, of course, and I'm quite fine and comfortable with it, payment for services model, which is the one which is most common. But this approach is the heartfelt approach, there to give support. So your gift allows Sangha Live to continue, give support to myself and the daily life expenses, and is give support to further programs, so that gives support to other practitioners and people new to it to come. And it's a precious global network of us offering dharma, that means teachings and practices, with dana, the use of the donations, which we receive with much appreciation and gratitude to each and every one of you. All right, enough on that. One more sip of the water. I have a very small table here in my living room. So the water is on the floor. So we have 25 minutes together. I've got my glasses here. And if there are any, ask a question. All right. So this is a written question and encouragement to anyone who might wish to ask questions. Do feel free to. You said that this trusting is unknowing, but it most certainly is not knowing. Can you explain a bit, please? Is not knowing more akin to including a touch of stress or doubt, so still be related to relative existence in some way? Thank you for this radical teaching. I'll touch upon this and hope to make it clear there with the question. I'm a human being, and there's enough sense, should we call it, of well-being, calm and equanimity, steadiness to leave my life aside, all of it. Initially, that may leave me with a sense of unknowing. The unknowing is a kind of feeling inside there, and when we put aside the known, it's called my life, whatever, it might leave us, it would probably leave us with some sense of unknowing. It is not to rest in the unknowing and to stay with a certain trust that there is a discovery to be made which easily and effortlessly embraces everything which I know, everything which I don't know, and including the unknowing. Because the knowing, the not knowing, and the unknowing, it belongs to the human sphere. It's a manifestation of what comes out of your and my experience. That feeling may be left still lingering there. It doesn't have to have any stress nor doubt in it. It may, but it doesn't have to have. And it can just remind us that I just need a little bit of trust so I don't just go straight back into my small, contracted little world and see what emerges out. And if something is valid, called a truth rather than a view, is something liberating about it, something deeply awakening about it, freeing us up there. And this I'm putting in the language of ultimate truth. I hope that's helpful. Yes, anyone else, please? Any responses? I get another. I have had many moments of calm abiding, as you called, where I was not. They have motivated me to walk the spiritual path. How can I get back there again now that I'm 82? I'm not far behind you, by the way. All right. Personally expresses these moments of calm abiding where I was not. The calm abiding where I was not, the person says, motivated me to walk the spiritual path. In this teaching, this evening, the dropping of the motivation to walk the spiritual path would be very helpful. And see, so rather than try to get back there again, because it's unlikely walking backwards, nor spiritual path, which is moving forwards in a certain direction there, and the number's got nothing to do with it. 82, it's irrelevant, just a number. More importantly, coming back to the theme here, for some it might motivate, and there's something precious and beautiful about that. I don't want to dismiss that in any way. But these teachings are talking about the end of the path, and we're talking about that in such a way that it's much closer at hand. So close, it's closer than the thoughts in our mind. That's the priority of the focus this evening. And lovely to hear of this. In the past, it's offered motivation for you. It's lovely. Right.
Christopher, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have Victoria who would like to come on screen. So may I bring her now?
Yes, sure. Yeah. Good. Yes, do. So, do I do anything, George?
No, just wait.
Okay.
I'm trying to invite her.
All right.
Okay, and here we go. Let's see if it works. Hopefully. Well, it seems not to be working. So, Victoria, maybe you can refresh, and meanwhile, you can go on answering questions.
I'll carry on answering the questions. Yeah. I prefer not to do anything to the screen. I'm no computer expert in these things. Okay. Some fine questions here. Could have a really lovely evening with these questions. You talked about forgetting yourselves, quietly receptive to everyday life. Is this similar to the state of being? A little bit with the focus and the priority here is there is a state of being. We're not only forgetting ourselves, in a way, we are forgetting everyday life. And there is a state of being. There are some who, my view, from what I read, spiritual teachers, religious teachers, and others, who in a way have elevated the state of being to too high a level and almost in contrast to the state of doing. It's not my view. But human being, with the being there, the establishment of the being, not as an end in itself, but as a feature of the preparation, so that there can be discovery which is not in any way tied up with being or doing. And that such discoveries, and in ultimate truth, the discoveries are infinite. Those discoveries, once again, means the human being can move easily, freely, remember, between being and doing. Because that which is seen and known is not of either. Right, next one. If you have an ongoing practice for many years, how do you put yourself in a position to feel the touch of ultimate truth? I must say the questions are in the five-star category this evening. Well, the core feature of the teaching is nothing is worth keeping with or holding on to in any way. And I have a little authority with this. I am, among other things, if I may say, a teacher of practice. But not even ongoing practice over many years, with all the love and the commitment and dedication that is given to it. Practice is relative. Practice is limited. Practice, even though it's so, might be so close to the heart, will give ourselves a greater access, shall we call it, to that which is not about practice. It's not just not about it. Practice is valuable. I love the practice. I'm a servant of the practice. But it needs to be seen really clearly for what it is. It is a way of developing as a human being. And to repeat the mantra of the evening, there is that which is more important than the development of the human being. Ultimate truth is that. Right. On one level, I don't have a big problem with the two truths doctrine. All right. But in another sense, I'm uncomfortable with the implicit dualism philosophically. When Nagarjuna, he is a great saint and sage from 2,000 years ago, when Nagarjuna speaks of emptiness, which in many Buddhist schools is considered to be ultimate truth, he says very beautifully, Buddhas say that emptiness is letting go of views. Believers in emptiness are incurable. Do you believe this hint that to believe in ultimate truth is missing the point altogether? All right. This is not a two truths doctrine. There. Unfortunately, the language, the semantics of it, genuinely give that impression. So, when in the talk, I encouraged us to put aside the relative, I'm putting it, that includes putting aside the relative truth of things. Because that's part of it, obviously. All the views that go with it. That's part of it. And therefore, the emptiness of it, in my language this evening of letting go, turning one's back on, seeing it's just conventional and relative, all of that was sincerely stated as a means that one doesn't end up with the two truths doctrine there. And I said as well here, belief in ultimate truth is a relative trying to get to the ultimate. The belief and all the views that may go with it is all part of that contracted world. Nagarjuna points to this, the Buddha points to this, and if I may humbly say, so does Christopher. So that when the understanding of the emptiness, of the holding to the views, which is, of course, the product of the mind, or seeing the emptiness of that, if understood well, it genuinely is liberating. And in liberation, truth is confirmed. And really, that truth is so precious in a way that that dual called relative and ultimate is kind of meaningless. It's just a little semantic. And it's not easy with the language. But I do say, even though it's a challenge with language, to bear with it so we are not a prisoner in any way to any doctrine of two truths. Perhaps it was made a little clearer right now, and also perhaps with the talk as well. But thank you for the fine observation and a good reminder there. So at the moment, there are no further questions currently from the listeners. If anyone wishes to put a question or to come on the screen, you're very, very welcome. Right. Nice. In my experience, the veil flung open totally unexpected. In some ways, it can't be searched for. Nice. Many ways of exploring here once again. But we have to be just tread carefully with the view. This is what I mean. There are genuinely, and as a Dharma teacher, with the opportunity to listen many, many experiences over the decades. For some, the veil, you know, that division, that gap, that we might call that gap, relative and ultimate truth, if you want to use that dualistic language, or whatever, suddenly it dissolves. It really genuinely does, and it's unexpected. And there is a discovery and a realization with a significance far greater than the modest event called my life, whoever the my life it might be about. And it may influence us in countless numbers of ways there. But it's not always to say that it is always unexpected and searching gets in the way. From listening to thousands, now thousands is a modest, it's an understatement, tens of thousands of people. There are people that I know who genuinely have engaged in life in a dedicated search, which has mattered in all the events of life, that it's a kind of feature running through the life. And that searching, with all the explorations, the practices, and the experiences that take place, may of itself enable these discoveries, which I have been referring to tonight in this language of truth. And therefore, my small suggestion is, let's recognize the spontaneous, unexpected, untrained for, shall we, unpracticed, we might say, unsearched for. Acknowledge those human beings who have discovered in that way, and let's equally recognize other human beings who have sincerely engaged in a search, are engaged in a search, and sometimes in the midst of the search, something may come through. A quiet period in which one is just lost interest in searching, something may emerge. So in other words, no matter what the event or the state of mind is, seeking or not seeking, nothing can stop truth. Nothing. That's what truth does. Shows the relativity of the doing and the not doing, the searching and the not searching. Marvelous. Anyway, how am I doing for time? I'm looking at it. Oh, only a couple of minutes to go. Perhaps at this point I should just say a couple of words to you, and we'll call it a day. Can we have a sip of the water? One of the key features in the sharing together, to put it in a slightly different language for a moment, the sense of the eternal, if you're comfortable with that word, brings a certain modesty and, in a way, kind of quiet humility to our life. It's not dismissed, but it's not exaggerated. And the sense of that in the ebb and flow of things, of the unexpected and the expected, the known and the unknown. The eternal, in a remarkable way, kind of provides us with a kind of space to accommodate. And we're not reliant upon having an experience to prove something or to show something. The eternal, waking up, or liberation, or finding God, or whatever language or no language you're comfortable with, is so free, it accommodates. And in its accommodation, we know we are not dependent on an experience. That surely is a relief. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone, for lending an ear, for generating the time this evening. Lots of love to you. Lots of love to the team at Sangha Live.